In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday, another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. And here's what you can expect for this hour. I will tell you, normally this is more of a political talk show, of course. Now, clearly we drive the show off the rails and talk food and life and the fact that I'm wearing a back brace today and other embarrassing things. And obviously, we do talk quite a bit of history on the show because I am a history freak. I love it. I talk about politics and power and anti-communism because I feel obligated to, because I feel an obligation, a duty to try to do what I can to save my country. But I will tell you, if tomorrow America was saved and fixed and we got everything worked out, I would love to just do a history show every day. I would. I feel obligated to talk about the fights that do matter, and they do matter. So I'm going to keep doing that a lot. But history is what I love. If you're a new listener, I will do this from time to time. You may love it. You may turn off the radio. Doesn't matter. I'm still going to keep doing it. I will just decide that I want to talk about history for a while, and that's what I'm about to do. Oh, I know about inflation numbers and everything else, and we'll get to a bunch of that stuff next hour. But for now, we're going to talk about Sulla. Lucius Cornelius Sulla. He finished his life with one of the great, great quotes of all time. A quote I'm not going to give you right now. You're going to have to wait until the end for that one. But first of all, who was Sulla? What are we talking about here? Well, we have to set this up and we have to go to Rome. This is pre-Jesus Rome. So there you go, Chris. You'll like that. This is pre-Jesus Rome. No, seriously. We're talking just, I don't give out dates and specific things like that because it ruins a story. Just think 100 years before Christ. It's right around that time. This is before Christ. Now, what's going on in Rome at the time? Well, remember, Rome, the Rome most people know, not you, but the norms, if you're the norms mostly know the Rome that was ruled by emperors. You ask people about Rome or Romans, they'll think about a dictator like Julius Caesar or one of the real monster types, Caligula, Nero. That's what most people think Rome is. But Rome was really one of the only ones in the ancient world. It began as a republic. In fact, they were dead set against any kings or any dictators. They wanted their country to be ruled by a group of men. Now, when I say republic, you need to not picture America's system. It wasn't quite that representative at all. There were classes, strict classes in the society, the Senate class, the knight class. Okay, so it's not as if this was just, Rome was just free. Land of the free.
You know, freedom is not free.
No. But it was a republic where they did not have a king. Now, the Romans, they understood that every form of government doesn't suit every scenario. So they understood on occasion you kind of need a king. You can't have a legislature debating this or that. You got to have one guy, pick the right guy, put him in charge temporarily. Hey, you're a dictator. You run the war. As soon as the war is over, you give up your power. So they had that system in place, but it was a republic. And because of that and the fact that their fighting was excellent, their fighting style was excellent, for that and a laundry list of reasons, Rome began to grow. Rome began small, obviously, like all nations do. It was just nothing. It was a
tiny village. And then they begin to grow and kick people's butts and grow and kick people's butts and grow and kick people's butts. And it's the butt kicking part we need to talk about specifically. Because here's what was happening in Rome. Rome was getting very, very, very wealthy as a nation. They were getting wealthy because militarily they were just dominating people. And in the ancient world, very much at this time, when you won a war against another civilization, you would pillage that civilization. Maybe you would just take it completely. Hey, we won the war. This is Rome now. But if you didn't take it completely, forget about just stripping the treasury of everything. They'd be taking the gold leafing off the wallpaper. You would take all the men, women, and children, and you would use them as slaves. Slavery is insanely lucrative financially and always has been. And it makes sense why it would be, right? Slavery is horrific. Yeah, you don't ever want to be one. And frankly, you should stand against the practice. But you understand, set aside the morality of it, of course it would be profitable. Ever talk to a business owner? Maybe you are a business owner or a manager. Have you ever looked at a profit loss sheet? We call them P&Ls, profit loss sheets. You can go look one up online. I'm sure there's a million examples of them. You'll look at, you can look and see how they're broken down. You want to know what virtually every business owner, business manager on the planet, the costs they're always trying to reduce? Labor costs. Now, you can yell and scream about that. They don't want to pay me. No, I get all that. I'm not the one that takes the employer's side all the time. But that is the big thing that's always dragging you down. Always. What if you could reduce those costs down to zero? Well, that's what slaves do for you. I don't have to pay you. I don't have to worry about your complaints. No, you will go work in my farmer's field. And if not, I'll crucify you in front of everybody. So that's how it worked. Slaves are big, big, big money. And so Rome, as it began to conquer and conquer and conquer, everyone in Roman society was prospering. One of those rising tide raises all boats thing. Think 1900 in America, right? Everybody. Now, we're not all the same, and we never will be all the same, but everyone is benefiting from living in this free country where money is pouring in and pouring in and pouring in and pouring in. But it's slavery especially was beginning to kill Rome from the inside out. The Roman leaders, they stopped falling in love with Rome and wanting what's best for Rome. And as they drifted further and further away from their founding, they started to fall in love more and more with just each other and their bank account. And they started to figure out, if we work together, we can make even more money. We can gather even more power for ourselves. And because we're pieces of crap who don't care about the people anymore, we don't have to be burdened by their concerns. None of this sounds familiar, does it? And so when they won these wars, they would hoover up gobs of slaves, gobs, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of slaves. And the slaves would all be purchased by the rich guys, by the richest guys, the senators, to everyone else. As soon as you won a war, you would know it's slave auction time, baby. And you would go down. I want that man, that woman, that kid, that this and that. You go down just like you're at Walmart picking out toilet paper. If you're a rich guy, you go down and start buying slaves. Well, what would it happen? What would happen in a society if they started importing people from foreign lands en masse? Because they could pay them less money. Not that you, an American citizen, would have any relation to that at all. Do I need to mention that over the last 3.5 years, we have a net positive by the million for jobs for immigrants and a net negative for American citizens? They were going through this exact same thing in Rome at the time. Mass slaves coming in. And so if you're a Roman rich guy, you own a big plantation, you've had 200 employees forever. Well, that's 200 men with families, wives, kids. They support them. They feed them. They everything else. And you've had to pay these guys to work on your plantation, grow my grapes, feed my cattle, do my this and that. And then you show up one day and say, hey, all 200 of you, step on up. yeah, you're all fired. You see, we just won a war with Carthage, and I have 200 guys who will never complain about their wages. They are slaves. Bye-bye. You're all unemployed now. And this was happening all over the place in Rome, where middle-class Romans were being smashed by the corruption of the elites in society by their mass import of slaves. And here's the thing, and you can pay attention to this in America today. When you have significant numbers of people upset about something, there will be a response. There's an old saying, a great saying. I believe it was somebody who worked for Nixon, if I remember right. But there's an old great saying, and it's so true about so many things in life. And the saying goes like this: things that cannot go on will not go on. You cannot have a nation full of citizens who are being smashed by the elites in their society and think there will never be a response. There began a political movement in Rome. You would know it. I would know it. We would call it a populist movement. They weren't called that. They were called populares, though. So you don't have to use your imagination. The populares were the populace. Who were they? What did they want? And this is going to come back to Sulla, a story about Roman history, because I'm done talking politics for a little while. It's too depressing. Before we get to that, you know what's wild about this time? 100 years before Christ. Think about this. Think how crazy this is. It's the year 2024. And if I were to hand you right now a sack of gold coins from Oxford Gold, and I put you in a time machine, and I sent you back 100 years before Christ, and you walked into Rome itself, it's just you, the clothes on your back, and a sack of gold coins, that you could get anything you wanted. You need lodging? No problem. We take gold here. Food? No problem. Services? No problem. You plug the toilet? We can get you a plumber. Give us some gold coins. The lasting power of precious metals tells you all you need to know. I could give you that same sack of coins and send you 2,000 years in the future, and you'll still have solid ground long after America's dead and gone. That's what buying precious metals is about. That kind of reliability. Call Oxford Gold Group and let them send you some. They'll get it in your retirement. They'll get some in your physical possession. They'll mail it right to your home. You don't need a bank vault. They're not gold bars. Do something that will last. 833-995-GOLD. All right? 833-995-GOLD. We'll be back.
Miss something?
There's a podcast.
Get it on demand wherever podcasts are found. The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday. Reminding you, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. This is formerly a political show, but now it's a history show for this hour, just because I'm done talking about politics for an hour. We're talking about Sulla. Just gave a little background on the populist movement in Rome at the time, so on and so forth. So a populist movement in Rome began to rise, in case you're just now joining us, because the elites of that society lost touch with their duty and honor, and they begin to wipe out the middle class with the mass import of slave labor from foreign lands. None of that sounds familiar or could ever happen here, right? Anyway, so this populare movement started to rise. Now, I'm going to pronounce the opposite party in a weird way, because I've listened to 5 different ways to pronounce it. Optimate is how I have always pronounced it, but then I've heard optimate. You have the populace and you have the optimates. I'm just going to call them optimates to make it easy. That's not how you say it, I'm sure. Who were the optimates? Well, they were the elite. These were the senators. These were the ones who wanted their corrupt system to remain in place. The populace, they wanted the system blown up. The system was not treating the people right. Now, I need to clarify something before we get to Sulla, because many of you will love Sulla when I'm done telling this story, and many of you will hate him. Remember, there weren't necessarily good guys and bad guys. The way I just set up the story, I made the optimates sound really, really bad, and they were really bad. I'm not saying they weren't. But it's not as if the populace were just salt-of-the-earth people who just wanted some bread and water out there. There were a lot of dirtballs. There were a lot of powerful people who thought they could gain more power for themselves by playing off the anger of the people. It's an ugly situation. Very few times in history are all the good guys on this side and all the bad guys are on that side, and this time's no different. All right? Whatever. The populists are fighting the elites. That's it.
Now that brings us to a man named Sulla. Sulla grew up poor. And in Roman society, one of the best ways to rise was the military. In fact, whether you were poor or elite, you almost had to have military service as part of your resume. I shouldn't even say almost. I've never found an elite Roman. I'm sure they exist. I have all kinds of experts who listen to the show who will correct me, but I've never heard of an elite Roman that didn't have military service. That's just something they required. At some point in time, and I don't mean sitting in the rear with the gear. I was scrambling eggs for 35 seconds in California. Thank me for my service. It was none of that. It was no. You go strap it on and you go stab people or get stabbed yourself. Remember, the Romans lost a third of the Senate in one battle when Hannibal wiped them out. The senators themselves, imagine a country like that where senators got up and strapped it on and went and died with everyone else. So military service was required, and it was a way you could advance in society, and it was a way you could make money, make a name for yourself. And Sulla shows promise early on. It's very obvious to everyone around him early on that he's a capable human being. Now, pause on Sulla for a moment, because we cannot tell the story of Sulla without telling a bit of the story of a Roman that everyone should know. Everyone knows the name Julius Caesar, and I'm a Julius Caesar fan, but everyone should also know the name Gaius Marius. Gaius Marius, he was never a dictator, so that's probably why he came. He was one of the earlier Roman lions, but he was one of these generals who was credited with saving Rome. At one point in time, these gigantic Germanic tribes were wiping out entire Roman armies, and they looked like they were going to wipe out Rome itself, and they probably would have, until this dude named Gaius Marius raises an army and goes up there outnumbered and beats the crap out of them. Rome probably only existed at this time because of Gaius Marius. Every single Roman at this time, every Roman would have known the name Gaius Marius in the exact same way every single American knows the name George Washington. Even the dumbest human being in this society, even Kamala Harris, knows who George Washington is. Everyone would have known Gaius Marius. He's Gaius Marius. Look, you want to know how big this guy was? At the end of his life, Roman troops were sent to kill him. And he said, are you going to strike down Gaius Marius? An assassin on orders was sent into the house where Marius was as an old man to kill him. And Gaius Marius sits up and says, are you really going to kill Gaius Marius? And the guy says, man, no, I freaking can't. And he turned and he left. That's how much of a legend Gaius Marius was at the time. All right. Now, there was something, I'm not going to go into the details of this, called the Jugurthian War. Don't worry about the names. And don't ever worry about stress about remembering the names when we go over these things. But it was against, I know you're going to find this shocking, against a man named Jugurtha. Jugurtha was one of these warrior kings, kind of a horseback guy. In a movie, he'd be an outlaw type, and you would like him. Honestly, you would like him. He sounds like one of these rebels, super tough, super smart, and he squares off against the Romans. The Romans send down Gaius Marius because Jugurtha keeps beating up Roman generals and avoiding Roman generals. He keeps escaping to the mountains. They can't find him. It's starting to get embarrassing for Rome. And so Rome, as they often did, they turned to Gaius Marius and they said, hey, can you get an army and go down there and handle this situation? This is embarrassing. We need to stop this. And Gaius Marius does, and he brings along with him a young officer named Lucius Cornelius Sulla. And I will continue our story in a moment. Before I continue that story, let's do something really quickly. We honored the fallen again at the beginning of the show. I hate how often we have to do it, but that's part of life. And, you know, we honor them on the show. We play taps for them. We pray for them. And that stuff does matter. I don't want to act like it doesn't. But then what happens? What happens to the families who are left behind? It doesn't bring dad back, does it? It doesn't bring your husband back. It doesn't fill that hole in your life. We move on and we talk about issues and history and other things. Tunnel to Towers is there and they don't move on. Tunnel to Towers, they've made it their mission in life to help these Gold Star families. They're paying off their mortgages to ease that burden for them. Fallen first responder families, homeless veterans, catastrophically injured veterans, they're building them smart homes. You're $11 a month. That's where it goes. And go look up Tunnel to Towers. When you give to Tunnel to Towers, it goes where you want it to go. That's unheard of in the charity world. Go to T2T.org. Sign up to give $11 a month. T2T.org. We'll be back.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained one or two just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions in just a second. I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday. Don't forget, if you miss any part of the show, you can download it on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Now, we're getting back to history in case you're just joining us. We're not doing politics right now. I'm talking history. And in fact, I'm just getting into the meat of it. So it still might be a bit. I can't promise you it won't last the rest of the show because I feel like it. Look, we had bad primary results. The inflation numbers are bad. We're debating on CNN. I don't want to talk about that stuff right now. So we're talking history, talking about Sulla and the Romans and who he was. All right. So the Jugurthian War, this guy Jugurtha is giving the Romans nightmares. They can't get their hands on him. He's so elusive. It's one of these crafty devils. And the Romans send Gaius Marius down there to get him. And Gaius Marius, whatever, I won't go into the details of it, but eventually, some hotshot young officer under Gaius Marius named Sulla comes up with what's basically a covert op to pretty much go undercover, recruit an asset. It's a cool little story, and capture Jugurtha. And Sulla pulls it off. Sulla actually manages to capture Jugurtha. Like I said, a very, very capable man. But Sulla wasn't in charge. And let's pause on this for a moment. There's something about military things that we should always keep in mind, especially as we read history, both our history, American history, world history, whatever the history may be. So often, pretty much every single time, when you discuss a battle, we discuss the commander of each side. And we say something like, MacArthur fought this other general. We act as if it was their war.
And I understand why we do that. It simplifies things. And he is the man in charge. Therefore, he's the most important one. I understand why we do that. But so many times throughout history, there have been generals, admirals, whoever they may be. They didn't come up with the genius battle plan that won them the battle on that day. They didn't come up with this strategy to hide this group in ambush. So many times, it was some lieutenant, some sergeant, somebody underneath him who said, "Hey, sir, you know what? There's some trees over there. We could hide a couple thousand dudes in there and ambush them from behind and win." And the general says, "Yeah, that sounds good." And he stashes the troops there and they ambush them and they come from behind and they win. And what does everyone say after that? "Look at this genius general. Man, he really outfoxed them." It's just how it goes. I'm not even complaining about it. That's how history goes. The guy who's in charge, they always talk about him like he was the one who won it. We do it. I do it. The same situation happened here to Sulla. Gaius Marius gets back to Rome after Sulla's craftiness got Jugurtha, but Sulla wasn't in charge. Marius was in charge. And Marius took all the credit for it, and the Romans were more than happy to give Marius all the credit for it. Well, now, for a guy like Sulla, it's just too much for him. So now they're mortal enemies. Mortal enemies. That brings us to something that is a horrible affair. And honestly, we could do a totally separate history on this sometime. I'm not going to do it today. Something broke out in Rome called the Social War. The Social War. And here's what it was. And actually, this is going to apply to us today, too. To be a Roman citizen, it was something in these times that was sought after. You wanted to be a Roman citizen. If you were a Roman citizen, if you were officially a citizen, then you got to participate in elections. You got a say. You had protections, including protections when you went abroad. That citizenship of Rome thing was almost a get out of jail free card because no other nation wanted to make Rome mad. Rome would make you pay for that. Remember that famous story in the Bible when Paul, he's sitting there getting whipped and they're yelling at him and he says to the guy, "Are you comfortable doing this to a Roman citizen? You know, I'm a Roman citizen, right?" And the guy almost poops his pants. I didn't know. Can we get him a blanket? I'm sorry, Paul. Why? You could go anywhere in the world and hold up your Roman citizen card and they would know. Don't tangle with this guy or you'll have a Roman army at your door. You wanted to be a Roman citizen. Well, Rome, they had been, remember, it started out as Rome, and then they began to conquer the Roman Peninsula, the Italian boot, as you would know it today. Well, these were separate societies. It was Samnites, and there was whatever, all kinds of different Italian societies, not Roman, but Italian. And Rome began to conquer all of them, and Rome had conquered all of them by this time. And these societies were living under Roman rule, and these societies were forced to provide Rome with troops whenever Rome wanted them. "Hey, 10,000 of your young men tomorrow, bring them here." But they weren't given citizenship, and they were starting to chafe under it, and a war broke out. They wanted citizenship. Now, let's talk about the two separate parties right now as it comes to that. The populace in Rome, the populares, they wanted these other cities to get their Roman citizenship. The elites, the optimates, for lack of a better way to put it, they did not. They were dead set against it. This war breaks out. Cities rebelled all over the place. It was a long, brutally bloody affair. And unlike most Roman affairs, it wasn't Roman armies going out and curb stomping these things and winning every time. Because remember, these societies were trained by Romans, equipped by Romans. They were, by all accounts, Romans themselves. So it was Romans squaring off against Romans. Sulla gets involved in this thing. He's fighting tooth and nail in this thing. And in the end, Rome has to give citizenship to all of these citizens. It's called the Social War. It was anything but social. Okay. Now, let's talk about Mithridates, another guy throughout history who's so fascinating. He's just amazing. Mithridates is a king. He's running a kingdom called Pontus. and Pontus, they're not bending the knee to Rome like everyone else is at this time. In fact, Mithridates, he's more than just throwing shade at Rome. He's killing Romans. He's attacking Romans. Rome's not going to stand for this. Sulla, this is about 88 BC. Sulla is made consul. He's made president. And Sulla is so well regarded militarily at this time that eventually, with this Mithridates thing, they decide they're going to put Sulla in charge of the army that will go and defeat Mithridates. Now, pause. We have a tendency when we hear things like this to think about this, like we put our modern shoes on when we think about this. So if it was, you know, me getting called up into the Marines to go fight in Afghanistan, you would probably think, and I would think, oh, well, that sucks. I mean, that's horrible. The only thing worse than the food is the pay and the fact you might get shot in the face. I don't want to fight anymore. My fighting days are done. I'm 42 now. I got a back brace on. I don't want to do that. But that's how we looked at it. For generals and their troops back then, warfare was not something they shied away from in Rome because of the insane money that would come into your coffers when you fought a war. If you were a Roman, just a Roman regular troop or a Roman general, you wanted to go fight a war and you wanted to go fight a big one. Yeah, you might die, but if you didn't, at the end of it, you were crazy rich because you were allowed to loot and the Roman generals would pay off their troops with slaves and money. You wanted it. And the Romans decided Sulla gets to go fight this. Ah! But then Gaius Marius steps in. And we'll tell you that story. I'll try to finish this up next. No promises. I might not. I ain't worried about it. Now, what the Romans did was they had to send men to go tell Sulla the news. That must be frustrating. I bet those men the entire way were sitting there thinking to themselves, if only I had a PureTalk phone. What, Chris? PureTalk is on this great 5G network. I don't want to have to ride all this way. It's hot. I'm thirsty. I know the call won't get dropped. In fact, I can just text him because PureTalk's on the same 5G network as the big guys. PureTalk also doesn't fund blatant open communism like the big guys do. Why do you have AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile? These companies hate your guts. They hate your values. Today is the day. Switch to PureTalk. Pick up your phone, dial #250 and switch to PureTalk. You dial #250, you say Jesse Kelly. Dial #250, say Jesse Kelly. Take 10 minutes on the phone, switch to PureTalk, and we'll be back to do more history. Hang on.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, doing an hour of history, maybe more than an hour of history. I'm not totally sure I'm going to get this whole thing wrapped up in the next 10 minutes, so it may bleed over into hour three, and that's just too bad. If you're listening to the show, you love it, you want to send us love, hate, death threats, ask Dr. Jesse questions for Friday, you can email us anything you want. They're always welcome. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. All right. All right, now, I'm not going to cover everything I've already covered. Just know that we're doing a history story about Lucius Cornelius Sulla, and Sulla is about to get command of a Roman fighting force who's going to go fight this guy, Mithridates of Pontus. But Gaius Marius is still around. And remember, him and Sulla, they're mortal enemies. And Gaius Marius is a populist. Mithridates is one of the elites. They are against each other in every possible way. Sulla, he wants this military command. He wants it badly. Of course he would want it really, really badly. It would be lucrative for his reputation, for his bank account. His men want it really badly. Sulla has already found out he's going to get it. He's already told his men. They are all excited about it. This is a good thing. Woo-hoo-hoo! But Gaius Marius is back in Rome, and he's politicking. And Gaius Marius
twists enough arms, pours enough honey into enough ears that he gets the command of the Sulla expedition, the Mithridates expedition, I should say. He gets it taken away from Sulla. This is Sulla's hour of glory, where he gets to command an army and go conquer somebody. They send men to Sulla's camp to inform him that he has his command now revoked. Hey, Sulla, too bad, so sad. You're no longer allowed to lead the Mithridates campaign. Well, you want to know how well that was received? Sulla's men took the messengers and stoned them to death. And then Sulla rallies his men and says, well, men, they want to take this away from us. We can either let them or we can march on Rome and make them do what we want. Now, I need to pause right now because there are a couple things I need to say that we've kind of glossed over. You know, I told you the populists were rising and there was this populist movement rising and how people, when there's enough people angry about something, they'll eventually start to get reforms. There were a bunch of populist reforms that had already been put into place, that were being put into place to try to calm down the anger of the people, to soothe their anger, tell them they're going to have more reputation, the elites aren't going to be quite as evil. So these reforms had already gone into place, all right? So there's that. There's also this little thing. Rome didn't have a barracks with an army in it. That's how I would picture it. Maybe you're different, but whenever I picture a powerful ancient city, I always picture, oh, well, surely they've got an army laying around, right? That was way against the law in Rome. You were not allowed to have an army within the Roman borders at all. That is not allowed. Well, Sulla gets his men rallied up and he says to them, fellas, let's go to Rome. And his men say, absolutely, let's go to Rome. And Sulla marches on Rome. Now, you know how I said Marius was there? He was the one who got Sulla's command taken away. When they all found out Sulla was marching on Rome, they freaked out. That had never been done before. Wait a minute. He's what? He's that mad? He's coming here? What do we have? Do we have anything that can fight him? Wait, we don't even have an army? So Marius fled. Sulla marches into Rome. He marches into Rome with his army, and he begins to do some reforms. What kind of reforms? Well, he's cleaning up a lot of this populist crap. A little thing here, a little thing there. He goes and tweaks some things, and then he tells them, okay, I'm glad I got you all straightened out. If it's okay with you, I'm going to go on my military campaign now, and I'm going to go fight. Anyone else have any complaints about that? And as you can imagine, all the Romans were all, oh, no, sounds good. Say, Sulla, I just want to make sure you guys have everything you need. Do you have your emergency 3-month food kit from My Patriot Supply yet? What, Chris? I didn't add that into the story. That's probably what they said. I mean, I'm not sure if My Patriot Supply was around 100 years before Christ, but they're such a great company. I assume so. They have, after all, helped millions of Americans already get prepared with food, emergency food. How much non-perishable food do you have in your home? Does everyone in your home have the ability to eat for 3 months if things go bad? And things do go bad. Gosh, I talked to Victor Davis Hanson today. He wrote this new book, and look, you need emergency food, okay? Everyone does. My Patriot Supply has their 3-month emergency food kits, $200 off with free shipping right now when you go to preparewithjessekelly.com. Preparewithjessekelly.com. That's where you go get your emergency 3-month food kit. You don't have to go crazy. You don't have to get 30 years worth. Get 3 months, all right? Preparewithjessekelly.com. Now, back to Sulla. Sulla marches off to war, and Sulla is fighting his war, and he's doing well. But something happens when Sulla's gone. Remember, Sulla marched in with his army, got a few reforms done, and then he left. He was off to war. And remember, this is the ancient world. He's not an 8-hour plane ride away. There aren't trains. There aren't automobiles. When you're marching off, you're gone for a long time. As soon as Sulla leaves, Gaius Marius comes right back into Rome and essentially takes Rome over for the populace. Sulla had put a bunch of his men in place. Gaius Marius starts to slaughter them. He starts to kill Sulla's men that were in place and starts to put in his populist government where he's in charge. Now, that brings me to something that's uncomfortable to talk about, but we talk about it all the time, especially because Joe Biden's the president. Age. At this time, Sulla, he's still a man very much in his thinking and fighting prime, probably 40s, 50s. I could look it up and tell you exactly, but he's very much in his fighting prime. Marius is an old man by now. And we don't know exactly what his condition was, but we know from a lot of the things that they've written down, he was having things like seizures. Look, he might have had dementia, right? We don't know. He's on the back end, right? So when I say Gaius Marius from now on, I don't want you to picture the Gaius Marius that went up and took on a gigantic army of Germans and defeated them all because he's Gaius Marius and he's the man. Life happens. We get old. This is old, broken down Gaius Marius. But he's not too broken down to kill Sulla's men. Sulla, off fighting a war, of course, gets word about what's happening in Rome. And Sulla says, oh, no. So Sulla quickly gets with Mithridates, and he makes peace because Sulla has a different war to fight. We will wrap up our history story and go back to politics next.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.